Hello, everybody. Just going to give everybody a couple minutes to log in here. Happy Tuesday to everybody as everybody's hopping on. Hello.
All right. We ready here?
Happy Toolbox Tuesday, everybody. Give everybody one more minute and then we'll get rocking and rolling here. All right, are we ready to go? All
Get going. Let's get into it.
right. So, for those of you who have not been with us before, this is our Toolbox Tuesday. We are talking about financial policies today. And Toolbox Tuesday is something that we do in our practices every Tuesday. We pick one of our tools out of our toolkit just to remind everyone of the resources that they have available. It helps keep everyone on track and calibrated with the same messaging. So, finances are the topics of the day.
Let's get into it. So we kind of went over why we did Toolbox Tuesday, and let's get into what the financial policies are and what we thought we had right off the bat before we even started the whole thing, because I think that's kind of the whole reason why we even started this topic to
Yes,
begin with.
100%. So I just want to start from, a doctor perspective. Sten, what did you think were the financial policies that we had in place for the practices before we really dug into this topic?
I mean, I think I was like any other doctor that we think they're ironclad. We think everyone's paying in the time of service. We think all of our insurance is coming in within 30 days. We think no one has a problem with the treatment plans. Sometimes we even, before we even started this, we were just starting treatment without even giving estimates, which is a whole other topic probably altogether that we won't have time to get into. But we weren't aware of problems until there was a very loud problem to be addressed, right? And I think that's kind of the main theme I hear from a lot of different doctors too, is that no one really realizes they have a problem with collecting. No one really realizes they have a problem with financial policies really until they either compare themselves to one practice as another, or they get a coach or a consultant in there, or they go to sell their practice, or they have a problem with their, obviously, within their, they have problems with patients that their front office tells them about. So that was the main aha moment for me when we started to kind of get into this, and Jennifer did the lion's share of this and kind of outlining why and what are our policies and what are being followed and what are not being followed.
When I think, doctors as a whole, and I don't want to generalize, but we've heard this time and time again, you assume that patients are paying you for the service that you're providing to them and that they are not questioning that, right? I think, we're responsible adults. When we go to medical providers, we pay our medical providers for the services that are being rendered. Unfortunately, that does not always transfer over in reciprocity. So we can't assume that that is the case.
We definitely cannot. So,
Yeah, I think,
go ahead.
sorry, Sen. I was going to say, I think when we started digging into it a little bit more, the biggest overarching thing that we found were how many special arrangements were happening. And, this was happening in our practices. This was happening in practices that we were looking to acquire. And we didn't realize that the team was really playing with our doctor's income. I mean, that really is just, the bulk of it. Sten, I think from a doctor standpoint, you were always paying your team members. That doesn't mean that you were receiving the same.
No, and I think this really came to light with me specifically when we started having more and more associates that were truly paid on what was collected and what wasn't collected. And we've always paid our associates on collections and not production. I still 100% think that's the way to go. But now that we have a collection rate of 99 point whatever percent, and sometimes even well over 100%, the difference between production and collection does not matter. That's another topic altogether. But a lot of these problems that we had with our collections really never became apparent to me until we started paying our doctors, because they have a very vested interest in our financial policies, right? And if something's not collected, no matter what the circumstances is, and we all know if we've run dental practices for years, there are a lot of ridiculous circumstances, whether that's with insurance companies, whether that's with patients, whatever it is, whether that's even with, you know, different transaction companies, things like that, which we've seen recently, is things happen, but if, you know, they really, really become a problem if the financial policies in your practice are not ironclad to begin with going into those problems. If you all of a sudden are getting paper checks from Delta after getting EFTs for years and years and years, and all of a sudden that's going to be very, very obvious if you're keeping track of things consistently. And so I think that was, you know, definitely something that became really, really important for us, because we knew that if our doctors were doing work, we wanted them to be paid within 30 days, within 2 weeks, obviously, sometimes. And so, you know, that's definitely something that we were really, really aware of, because if we truly believe that if you're going to work in our practice, we want you to be reimbursed for it very, very well, right? And seeing that income come back to associates as quickly as possible is what motivates people. It's what motivates me. It's what motivates associates. It's what motivates our team members. It's why we bonus the same week. You know, we need to see that kind of immediate feedback, and collecting money is the only way we can do that.
And money is, you know, the big scary monster in the room that nobody wants to talk about. We're here to make an income, right? We just literally said this on our team meeting this morning. And, you know, yes, we're here to help people, and there's a ton of reward in what we're doing, but this is a business, and patients are not walking in the door expecting to receive dentistry for free. And if they are, we need to question whether or not those are the right patients for our practices, because this is not a volunteer clinic. And I said this in our all team meeting to our team, you all are not volunteering your time, right? You know, it's not, well, you know, I feel bad for this patient XYZ, but I'm going to sacrifice my paycheck for that this week. That's not the way that it happens. So, and our doctors are the same way, right? They're looking to us because they want an income as a doctor. They're not looking to donate their services. So we need to all just acknowledge that that is what it is. And it doesn't mean that you have to be a monster about it and, you know, be yelling and screaming at patients and you pay me now, or, you know, I'm taking your house. That's not what the conversation has to be. It's all about expectations. And when we took a hard look at our own processes and we're questioning why were all of these special arrangements happening, it's because we didn't have a consistent policy in place. It's not because our team members are bad people and they don't want to collect for you and they just want to be friends with patients. Some of those things may be true, but if you have something that is everyone can follow, it's a lot harder to break that system down.
Yeah. And back to the special circumstances too, on that same topic. Another way this became very, very apparent to me is when we started acquiring more and more practices, and every single one at this point, that we've acquired, whether merged or started a new practice, has had their financial, their AR.
Right.
We've had all their lists of, you know, different people that are collected from 30, 60, 90 and beyond. And then every single one of them gives you their book of sticky notes.
Right.
And these are all the people, you know, Joe Smith is paying you $10 a month or, you know, for from now until whenever, I mean, all these different things, and going into a practice and having that special arrangement with that one front office that's been there since people had teeth is fine. It's not fine, but it worked for that person. But when that person goes away, that is a whole another set of problems, right? And so, you know, having these ironclad policies, having these systems in place is so important when you have different team members come in and out, whether you have just two or three front office people, and one person has a special arrangement with one person, but not the other person, and they only can talk to this other person. It just creates so much turmoil and so many problems in the front office and the flow of the day.
The trades are always my favorite. I mean, we have case studies for the live long day. You know, we had an acquisition where it was the veggie lady, right? You know, it was the organic farmer down the street that for that owner doctor, she dropped off the box of veggies. And I mean, in our due diligence process, we said, that's great. That's a lot of veggies that we're talking about, you know, from a dental work standpoint, or saying that you had, you know, from a prior partner, it was the hairdresser, right?
Right.
That wasn't a need that you had as far as, you know, trading dental services for, you know, the hairdressing appointment. And you know, it ends up being an awkward situation all the way around.
So someone's always going to feel like there's an unmet arrangement, right? There's
and there is.
There's a fulfillment of a promise that's not It didn't happen. And it's always the case. I mean, we've been involved in barter situations reluctantly way, way in the past. I'll never do them again, but they never seem to work out very well in the end, or in my experience at least. And I know there's probably people that will tell me that otherwise, but aside from being illegal generally when you're talking about insurance, and if we're talking about fee for service, that's one thing, but also from the lens of your team members too. And if you're bonusing on them, you know, how does that work? You know, and then you're constantly, you know, having to explain yourself and why you're doing something differently this way. And that can just always create special circumstances in the team member's mind as well.
100%. And that leads into, you know, the pain points that we were trying to solve. And, you know, the insurance contracts was definitely one that was on there. And, you know, none of us read the fine print a lot of times when we're signing those things, but that is very clear as day. And we have had this come up when there's been financial disputes, that in your insurance contracts, if you are a PPO practice, you must collect the copayment from the patient at the time of service period. Now, there can be third-party financing involved, but anything outside of that is a violation of your insurance contract. And we've had that come up time and time again, where if that is not enforced, that can compromise the contracts that you have, and you're much less likely to win in a dispute with an insurance carrier. You know, if we have a patient who is disputing a bill, one of the very first questions that the insurance carrier asks us is for proof that we collected the copayment at the time of service, because you have to treat everyone the same. That is part of the contract that they're signing with insurance. So something to keep in mind also with the special circumstances. It's the same reason that we started phasing out the senior discounts. That was actually a recommendation that we had years ago, because it was turning into discrimination about asking for age, even though we have that on record. Where is the line now? Full retirement age is technically 70, you know, on and on it goes. You got to treat everybody the same.
Yeah. another pain point that we were seeing, that I was seeing actually quite a bit, is that when doctors were asked to discuss finances or even make payment arrangements with patients, that never went well.
Right.
Ever. And I think what that it in my mind, and I don't think that we should avoid the money conversation, but it's not something that we should go down too far with the patient, and primarily from the stance that we're not the best people to have those conversations. We're not the most educated about those situations, you know, not even close in our offices for sure. Secondarily, generally when patients are asking that question of the doctor, it's always around changing treatment based on money.
Right.
And we always coach our doctors on having that what's your budget conversation, or that question, you know, very, very early on in the conversation. I think that's really, really important, only to get a kind of a bracket, meaning if someone can't afford it and all on X, are we going to a locator, or are we going to something else, right? And some of that same, but you never want to give someone a treatment plan that's going to blow them out of the water and embarrass them and never have them want to come back when it's just nowhere near their budget. But not from the standpoint of what they're actually going to pay. I think we're just trying to narrow down how we make that exam conversation more effective. And when doctors try to get into that conversation more with the patients, a number of things happen, or a couple things primarily, but a number of things go wrong. One, it puts the doctor in a different light, I think, in the patient's mind, as someone that they can wheel and deal with a little bit, or someone right. that actually does have control over the finances. When yes, a lot of times an owner doctor will have control over the finances if it's out of network, things like that. But that's not the way that we should practice, right? And if a crown's a fee, it should be the fee. It's the way it goes. We're not wheeling and dealing. And secondarily, from the standpoint of they're always going to think that the finances or the money, the fee is negotiable.
Right.
And if I go to the head honcho, if I go to the doctor, maybe he'll just either tell me I don't need a crown I'm going to tell him it's going to cost too much.
Right.
Or maybe we can take a little off the top. Right. And I think that really just changes that mindset from a service provider, someone helping you out with a disease, with a problem that you have, and doing a service, to someone that we're wheeling and dealing on elective service.
Right.
Right.
Well, and we're dead serious about, we don't want our doctors looking at the fee schedule for the patient before they walk in the room. I don't. Right.
I don't want to look at it.
I mean, number one, they can't do anything with that information, but we want to make sure that there is not a question in the patient's mind that a doctor is recommending treatment based off of what they need, not well, your insurance may or may not cover for it. So maybe we'll do X, Y, Z, this, that, and the other thing. You give everyone the exact same options. And we've also seen it go in the opposite direction where a patient might just be inquiring about the cost and a doctor gets themselves all worked up about, well, maybe they're asking for less or they're asking for a deal when that may not be the case at all. And they were just asking for an estimate. And now we've created a problem that didn't exist. You know, we also talk about focusing on addressing what the problem is, what the question a patient actually has versus creating your own and jumping to conclusions.
Yeah, absolutely. So second thing is not having a standard way of doing things, whether it's financials that we're talking about, whether it's just, you know, new patient intake, whether it's just the way we set up rooms and all these different things. But when you don't have a set way of doing things, the patient doesn't know what to expect. And if the doctor doesn't know what to expect, if the team member doesn't know what to expect, there's no way that they can translate that into how they treat the patient and to show them what to expect. And if a patient expects to pay the same day and they know exactly what to pay and they expect us to bill their insurance once and then resend once if it gets kicked back and that's it, if they have all these things outlined, they know exactly what to expect. There's not a lot of contentious conversations that happen around that because they know exactly what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. And we're keeping them communicating the whole time. But if it's always a little bit of a different situation each time, that's very frustrating for a client, for a patient. Yeah.
Well, that's back to, you know, how do you want to be treated? You know, when you go into a doctor's office, you know, anytime that we go into any provider's office, I use the vet as an example quite frequently because my dog is my child and, you know, I'm eyes and ears on everything as far as that experience is concerned. And so solving for those pain points that we've all had and have been frustrated with. And that's the slide that I have up on the screen here. We put this out for our patients so they know exactly what to expect from an accounting standpoint. It holds our team accountable and we're putting it out there so that there isn't any question. And that's some of the main takeaways that we want everyone to have from chatting about this today is, it is possible to create policies that everyone can very easily follow. You do not have to accept what the industry standard is. I'm doing air quotes here in case you're listening to this on the podcast version later. We've heard from plenty of consultants over the years that a healthy AR is 70% or 60% or whatnot. Enter our gamified challenge for this, right? I never accept just what the quote unquote industry standard is. We strive to be significantly better than that. And hopefully we can inspire you to do the same. And keeping doctors out of the financial conversation is a big one that STEM mentioned, and this can be implemented. Your team might give you kickback, right? That's impossible. Patients aren't going to abide by this. This is your business. This is not their business. This is your business to make that decision on. The elephant in the room question is, will you lose patients as a result of this? Yeah, you will. And we did too, but can you afford to keep those patients in your practice that are not paying for the services that you're rendering to them? Because we could not. And that was our breaking point.
Yeah. And I think our breaking point too was our AR, quite frankly, and how much it climbed. And in trying to give everyone what they wanted, you know, trying to accommodate as many people as we can, whether it be team members, whether it be patients, whatever it is, the more people we tried to accommodate, the more special issues we had to address where people were asking for a manager, Jennifer had to get involved, people were asking for a doctor where I had to get involved, and it eats up your day. It eats up your day and it doesn't translate into more collections is the issue. So I think the minute that we put in ironclad AR and financial and collection policies that we just did not back down from, you know, Jennifer, I'm going to put you on your spot, but we were at an AR of what from a percentage standpoint, and now to an AR of what after this. Now this is now 10 years later doing this.
Yeah, I mean, we were well over 100%. I mean, we were, you know, 120, 130%.
I think we were closer to 200%. Now we're below 30% of 1 month's collections too. And I think, and we're not going back. And yes, to Jennifer's point, we definitely lost patients. And some of those patients were patients that paid. We're not going to tell you it wasn't. The lion's share was patients that didn't want to pay though. Right. Go ahead.
As I say, even the patients who paid, you also have to look at how much energy it took them to pay. Right. I mean, we had some patients that they weren't the ones handling their account. You know, they have trust funds. They have people that are managing their finances. They couldn't be bothered with that. Do you know how much time and energy it took from our team to track down the people who were in charge of the finances? Get a check before you walk in the door, right? Or give us a credit card to run on file. We don't want to have to bother you with it either. It was so much energy for those people. And those are not fun conversations, right? Nobody wants to be the bill collector.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So, and I think another point I'll just make too on the pain points that we kind of saw too is, and this that I noticed in coming from where we were to where we are right now, when you have ironclad policies or you have ironclad protocols, when people are start off as new patients, they know how the billing works, even existing patients, when they know all these things, you don't bend on a lot of these things. It seems to give the patient a little bit of an image that you don't bend on anything and that you have your standards and you have your, you're not willing to lower your quality of anything, whether it's the billing, the onboarding, the training, even the financial policies. And they assume that translates into your dentistry. And I think we saw that time and time again. And if we're negotiating, we're bending on a lot of our financial policies, we're bending on a lot of our scheduling policies, whatever it was. They're assuming that the way we do a crown, the way we do an implant, the way we do a denture, whatever that is that there's a different way to do it each time. And there's time to negotiate on how many appointments or can we do this? Can we do that? Instead of this is the way I do things. I know it works. I know what's going to work for you. Right. And let's get started. Right.
Right. Right. 100%.
No.
So I think that leads into what all is actually involved in our financial policies. And I think that people as a whole are so intimidated by this topic and talking about money and finances that they overly complicate it. And it really just breaks down to a couple of points, right? Yes, everybody's afraid to talk about money, but as we circle back to, we're here for an income, right? We have to talk about money. We have to talk about it with our team, we talk about it with our doctors, we talk about their individual goals, their financial goals. You know, even with our team members, every quarter, I have a breakout with every team member individually. And I ask them about what is their why, right? Why are they here? Why are they walking through the door every day? And what financial goals are they trying to achieve for themselves? You know, it may be that they're saving for a house or, you know, they're trying to go back to school or paying off school loans. It may be they want to have their nails done every week, right? I don't care what it is, but keeping in mind for them that they also have financial goals that are achieved by upholding these policies and the practices. So, you know, making sure that our doctors are confident to say that there's a charge for what they do, right? They have to have some self-worth in what it is that you're doing. You guys have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars going to school, pouring into your education. You're worth it. Right. You got to have a little bit of that swagger. I think Sten can speak to that, you know, from a doctor's standpoint, but you know, that's a scary thing.
It's a scary thing, but I think that it's saying no or saying that I'm not the first person to talk about that with it, and I'm referring to finances, obviously, is really, really hard from a doctor's standpoint, because we want to be people pleasers and we want to talk about it and we want to help people and you know, break down barriers for them, you know, erase some friction to scheduling, whatever it is. And we think the more we talk, the more we convince someone, the more we negotiate that we're breaking down barriers for them. And really what we're doing, and we've seen it, we just saw it yesterday, actually, when we watched an exam video for a doctor, is it creates more barriers and it creates more question marks in the patient's mind. And I think having that moment of silence when you tell someone that you can't talk about that, or there's no negotiation, or this is what has to happen, when whether it's they ask you if you can do a filling instead of a crown, or can we not do the buildup on the crown, or you know, whatever it is, does that really need this an extraction? Can't you just, you know, can't we just let it wait? Whatever it is, having the confidence in yourself and having the confidence in your office policies to say no, and then not talk during that silent period is really, really important, right? Because you know they're going to be a little bit shocked, but that shows that confidence too. And what we talk a lot about, that kind of moment of silence and things like that, it's very, very awkward. It's extremely awkward, right? But it's so important, whether we're talking about the exam, whether we're talking about financial policies, whatever we're talking about, it's so important not to fill the space with words, because those words look like we're not confident in what we're telling the patient at that point.
Well, it's demeaning for your team, you know, coming from a team member's perspective where you're trying to do everything that you can to uphold what the policies are, but you know that patient X is going to come in the door and say, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod with the doctor. And you just had a 10-minute conversation of trying to explain what the policies were. And if your doctors don't back you up, that's incredibly discouraging, you know, as a team member. And you have those situations. You know, we tell our doctors, we have lots of pathway isms. And one of our lines is make sure you raise up your team members, right? You know, you have to show the patient first and foremost that you also have confidence in your team, not just in yourself, but in your team members, to raise them up and execute on what it is that you're asking them to do.
Yeah. And if this was a very hard thing for me to learn, and it is for our doctors as well. But when someone asks that question about the financial negotiation or policies, or can I pay now, can I pay later, whatever it is having those responses ready. And we call them sound offs in our practice, but a lot of those are, I'm going to have Jennifer talk to you about that. She's the pro at that, raising your team up and doing that publicly in front of the patient, or at least privately in front of the patient in the room, but doing that by giving your team member a compliment, showing the patient, telling the patient that this person is the master at this, that this person is the expert, and saying, I'm not the person, you know? And I would frequently tell people, if people ask me how much is that going to cost, or can I pay three months down the line or whatever it is. And I would just say, I have no idea.
I have no idea.
I'm going to get you as someone who's a pro at that can help you with all those things. And you have a lot of options, right? And that really goes a long way, because having someone come into the room that the patient already thinks is the expert or the pro that's going to help them out with the money aspect is huge. Instead of that person that they might think is a second rate employee or doesn't know enough or, you know, is going to make some mistakes or is going to try to figure something out or, you know, they're going to tell them one thing and then they're going to go ask the doctor for a different answer, whatever it is. You know, asking mommy, then asking daddy, and then doing, you know, asking as many people as you, until you get the answer that you want to hear. But if they're not going to ever find that answer that they want to hear in your practice, then they start to realize it's a different place. Right. And I think we've seen time and time again that the more the team and the doctor are aligned in that and staying in their lane and really pumping each other up, the more it looks better to the patient.
100%. So our policies are simple. We break it down and everyone is aware of them. Front office, back office. This is not just on front office to uphold these policies. Our back office team members are very well aware. We train all of our assistants to be able to take payments also, so that if, you know, front office is tied up with something, everyone is helping with this. So first and foremost, co-payments are due at the time of service, period. Now, we have options for payments that I'll get into here in just a second, but we provide our patients with a treatment plan estimate at the time of scheduling. That's actually what we'll be talking about next week for Toolbox Tuesday and the scripting around that, so that a patient does not have a question about what their responsibility is at their next appointment. And when they schedule their appointment, they know what is expected of them the next time around. We have several third parties that we work with in terms of financing. You know, financing is something that has become even more needed than ever before in the last few years. So we have several third-party financing options that are available. We did at one point in time have an in-office financing payment plan situation that went with recurring credit card payments, and that did not go well for us. It was a great thought and a lot of patients appreciated it, and they appreciated it to the tune of paying for their first payment and then canceling their credit card, and we never saw the rest of it. So we let third parties handle that going forward. And, you know, again, we're not the bill collector. It kind of takes us out of it and separating us from the financial part of it and being the providers. But we do have several third party financing options available for patients. We accept all credit cards. Amex has a higher transaction fee. That is true. We accept all credit cards. We take them all.
Yep.
When it comes to appeals, we appeal one time on a patient's behalf. And we have our insurance AR on a 14-day cycle. We do not wait 30 days to find out that for whatever reason, Delta's clearinghouse wasn't accepting claims on March 2nd. And we find out 2 months later. We find out 2 weeks from now. So if we need to resubmit something, we can do it right at that point in time. We also are not waiting for insurance to come back and ask us for a narrative, for an x-ray, for an intraoral. We send everything right off the bat so that there are less questions. Now, there are still claims that come back. And I know that the insurance companies say that there aren't a certain number that they deny. I think there's a certain number that they deny. You know, you guys have seen, you know, those endo teeth that come back and like, that's standard of care. You need to cover for that. But anywho, we send everything right off the bat. If we have to appeal, that's a big deal. And we let our patients know right off the bat that we're appealing this. And it's not, oh, this is between us and your insurance company. No, your insurance company is not paying for the benefits that you are due. We are not overdiagnosing treatment. This is treatment that you needed. These are all of the facts to support the treatment that you needed. And they're not paying the benefits that you are due. You would be surprised at how many patients get on the phone with that insurance company that day because they don't want that bill in the mail and they're helping us be proactive to get that claim covered.
Yeah.
We do not do.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I said, we do not do this appeal process that goes on for 6 months, 9 months, a year at a time. That is a no-go in our practices.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge point though about if we let the thought that the insurance company is denying something because it was either unneeded or we did something wrong, that is handled before that thought even has a chance to originate in the patient's mind. And by saying we just do not have denials, we're showing the patient exactly why we did something. We're telling the patient that we do this hundreds of times every year. We're not letting ourselves ever become at fault. Right. And so and that puts us in the eyes of the patient as the advocate, and we're fighting for them. We're fighting them for them to a point. And sometimes we need their help. And I think, it seems like almost every single time we get patients on the phone. And I mean, those payments are in our hand very, very quickly after that. Yeah.
Those patients go wild. There's times they contact their employer, and as they should, right? Again, you know, insurance maximums are so minimal at this point. I mean, you all know this. You know, you're looking at $1,000, $1,500. And most of the time, these people or their employers are paying 5-6 times in a premium for what they're actually getting from a benefit standpoint. They need to pay out what they're doing.
Right.
You know, we're not talking about million-dollar claims here.
No, not even close. Not even close.
Balances are due after insurance pays, if there is a balance left over within 30 days. There are times that an estimate is off for one reason or the other. We had a patient who, it was actually a case study that we used because he had crowns done and insurance didn't cover anything for his crowns, which was different than what he had had coverage for in the past. Our team was all worked up. He's going to have this huge balance. And the patient literally came in the door, hanging his head with a credit card in hand. Like, what did you do? I didn't read the fine print when I downgraded my insurance plan for the new year. And I just thought it was going to be less of a plan. He knew full well, he changed his benefits, didn't let us know. And he had a balance that he had to take care of. But that was what happened with that situation. But those are due within 30 days that we receive payment from insurance. We've already completed the data service. It's been X number of days. They need to take care of it within 30 days.
It's a perfect example, kind of on the same topic we just talked about too, because if the patient knows what we're doing and why we're giving, how we're giving them that estimate based on the information that they gave us, they know right off the bat that we're doing as much as we can for them based on what they've given to us and what the insurance has given us. And they know that if something goes awry, it's probably not always, but it's probably not something that we did accidentally, right? Or at all, right? Something had to go wrong. Yeah, this is gets back to having a system. If something goes wrong within that system, they know that it's not the system's fault generally.
Right.
They've seen it happen time and time again. They've seen it work.
Right. Accounts over 90 days are forwarded to our revenue recovery service. That's the first step towards collections. They do not go directly to collections, but you know, we again are not monsters. We're looking to work with people, but if they have not had any communication with us in 90 days, we need somebody to take it to the next level. And our revenue recovery service, the first statement that they send out to patients is bright red. And that bright red statement gets a lot of attention. So if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. You know, we got to get it taken care of. Cancellations, we require 48 business hours notice for patients to cancel their appointments, or it's $100 per provider hour that they were scheduled. They need to respect our time. Again, we're not monsters. If someone comes down sick, we're not holding their feet to the fire. We don't want them in if they're sick either. But the people that, you know, are just constantly jerking our schedules around, that's not okay. There's other patients that are on our waiting list. They need to give us notice. And that also means that they cannot call us on Saturday night for a Monday morning appointment. That is also a no-go situation. And we do not discuss patient balances if they walk in without an appointment. We talked about this in our sound off last week, that we are not looking for patients who are going to create a scene in our front office. We're controlling those conversations to make sure that they are productive and they stay on track and not in front of other patients.
Yeah. And the financial conversations, whether it's a question about a bill, whether it's a dispute about a bill, whatever it is, those need to be handled. Those need to be led very, very strictly. And I think not addressing them at the time they call, not addressing them at the time they email, but having that time to research the balance, research where that's coming from, and give them a written response is a really, really big step. Because I think it really lets people know that we have all the facts. Everyone has all the same facts. Let's have a discussion. Let's figure out how to move forward. But not coming in guns blazing about something that no one has the facts about, that we have to scramble and try to research in the middle of an appointment where we're trying to check other patients in, that is a no-go. Yeah. And it's just, it never gets resolved at that time. It always creates bad blood, and it's such a stressful time for the front office, for our team members, that it creates so many problems. It just cannot happen.
And one of the things that you will notice is missing from this list, and it is missing intentionally, are pre-authorizations. We do not do pre-authorizations in our practices. I know that that makes people uncomfortable and makes people squirm a little bit, but something that we realized very quickly with pre-authorizations is that is not a guarantee of payment. And that is not any more of a guarantee of payment than looking at benefits on Delta site or whichever insurance carrier that it is. And we have a very painful case study example of this with an insurance plan that was amazing, had a $10,000 maximum. Patient had an anterior case done. Sten, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it might have been a full arch, if not more. But did a pre-authorization for her. This was from a practice acquisition, and that was their standard policy. So we were trying to continue the continuity of care there, did the pre-authorization. Insurance came back saying that she would have $9,000 in benefits for that anterior case, proceeded with the case. She was expecting $9,000 in insurance benefits. When it came time to submit the claim, they denied it for aesthetic reasons, even though we had a pre-authorization in hand stating that they were going to pay $9,000 in benefits. You want to talk about a tough conversation with the patient? That's a tough conversation with patients. So, you know, if patients want to call insurance and, you know, get an estimate that's different than what we get online, they're welcome to, but we explain it to patients that way because that is the case. And we don't want patients to go in with a false sense of security and have a $9,000 unexpected bill.
Right. And that was a case that we were replacing an old bridge.
Right.
And they're saying that it was still for aesthetic reasons, meaning that
that's right.
They wanted her to have a partial, go right from a bridge to a partial.
That's insurance for you. We gotta love insurance. So.
Everyone's had those situations, and everyone's seen these kind of seemingly backwards, you know, protocols that the insurance companies have, but they do it for a reason, and they're, you know, they serve a great purpose, and a lot of them really work with patients and the doctors, but they're really looking at things from their benefit. Right. They're at the end of the day, they're still a business, and we need to remember that
they're a business too, 100%. And, you know, overarching, and we're going to get into more details about this. This is not the last time we will be talking about this topic by any stretch of the imagination, because it is a monster. But, you know, really making sure your entire team has the financial knowledge and some of that understanding. And the main relief that we saw from our front office was just like on the what to expect sheet that I had up from patients, they know what to expect also, you know, distilling down what was expected of them, what they needed to be doing on a daily basis, and then having those sound offs for when these situations came up, and realizing, again, like we talked about in our sound off webinar last week, there are very few outlier situations. You know, again, right, I'm using air quotes here. We can make them into outlier situations, but they weren't outlier situations. It gets back to the same thing that we're talking about. Hey, you want to have financial policies, copayments are due at the time of service. That is the case for everyone. we have financing options available. If you need to stretch out financing a little bit more than that, we will bill insurance as a courtesy to you on your behalf. If we have to appeal, we'll do it once. After that, we need you to get involved. Plain and simple. It does not have to be a big laundry list of things that are involved. Like I said, we go the extra step of giving patients treatment estimates at the time of scheduling so that they know when they walk in what is expected of them. If they are doing financing, it gives them time to apply if they need to make sure they have payment options and whatnot. And it's the same for every single patient who walks in the door. And if you are in the waiting room, you're seeing that you are being treated the exact same way as the patient that's walking in the door behind you. It's the same every single time.
Yeah. And being a master at the financial policies, being a NAP master at what you're doing, it's not having 20 years of experience and seeing every possible situation. It's really, really being savvy with the tools to handle those 5 or 10 situations that come up, primarily just 2 or 3, and really being practiced with the tools and with the tips and tricks that we give our team to handle those situations as well as they can.
And knowing that if a patient comes to you and says, Dr. So-and-so told me it would be XYZ, you go, no, they didn't, because you know full well that your doctors, and that was not always the case for us, right? I mean, we had that plenty of times before then. We had to go talk to Dr. X. I said, what did you say? But fortunately, you know, Sten and I had a very good working relationship. If I had a patient tell me, Dr. Erickson said this, that, and the other thing, I said flat out to the patient, no, he didn't, because I knew with certainty there was no way in hell that he had just made a separate financial arrangement with that patient. I knew without talking to him, because he did not have those conversations with patients, period. So that ended the conversation real quick. And that's okay. That's the way it needs to be just across the board. And like I said, our team has a lot less stress from a financial standpoint because of it. They know what the responses are and they know how to execute it the same way every single time.
Absolutely.
And next week, we'll be talking more about our treatment presentations and how we handle that, giving patients some estimates against that they know what to expect. Dentistry is expensive, and we're not hiding from that. We show them what the benefits are, what the financial options are. If they don't have insurance, what different options there are, and again, how you can calibrate that message across your team. And I have one additional announcement. If you have seen on our social posts today, we have the date for our next Level Up program that is going to be focused on onboarding. And we talked about our first 400 program a couple of weeks ago. We're going to be focusing on our back office first 400 program that will really give you the tools to make sure that your team is able to train your new team members, make sure that you're not boxed into keeping team members that you know need to be replaced, or being able to hire people who don't have dental experience. So that is going to be launching May 30th. We have our registration links on all of our social pages and on our website. So that is open now for anyone that wants to join us for that next program.
Sounds good.
All right, everybody. If there's any other questions, we'll answer those via email, and we will see you back next week for the next Toolbox Tuesday.
Have a great week.
Have a good day, everybody. Bye.